Hi, welcome to JStock Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you, having as rough a start to the show as Toronto sports had last night a city. Toronto Maple Leafs, bad. Toronto Blue Jays,
worse.
Bad. Yeah. Although, I don't know about worse. It is, things are not going well for the Toronto Blue Jays. They have lost 8 of 9. They got pantsed last night by the Red Sox 10-2. It is still technically April, and while I don't mean that to mean things are going to be better and anyone should feel rosy about it, there's a big difference between you're off to a bad start the regular season and you're staring down potentially blowing a 3-0 series lead to your little brother.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And maybe it's just because, you know, I didn't really tune into the Maple Leafs last night.
Why would you?
You kind of just, I was following along, obviously, right, as I watched the Blue Jays game. But it just unraveled so spectacularly at Rogers Center. I've never seen, Blake, a team have all of their issues just so viscerally exposed all at once in one game. We are going to talk about the offense because that is just what we've been doing. And we have some historic stats to share because
every day I have a new one.
Because this is getting to historically bad proportions right now. But the fact that it happened all at once, it's not just that the Red Sox came in and just decided to rub salt in the wound and just say, oh, I hear you can't hit home runs. Boom. Oh, these old things, and here's another, right? It's also that Bowden Francis couldn't go very far. We have a bullpen day scheduled for today. That exposes just the glaring depth problems that the Blue Jays have on the pitching side as well. It was everything in one game. I've never seen that before.
Not only was it everything in one game, we're coming off of a doubleheader where they basically split the issues that they've been having. We'll have one game with these issues and one game with these issues. And then today they put it all together, or yesterday they put it all together. We've been asking for them to put it all together. We weren't
like
specific.
This.
We weren't specific enough. So they got out-homered 5-1. We'll get into some of that, the historical context. Before we get into the specifics of the game, however, I have to ask you your take on something. It's, if I go and I pick up a coffee, I'm walking on the street and I trip and I drop it, but I catch it before any coffee spills out.
Yeah.
Is it more like, am I more embarrassed for dropping the coffee initially, or is it actually cool that I caught it?
Listen, as someone who drops things a lot and has sort of developed a mechanism to catch them in the air before, because I just do it so often, I think it's cooler to catch it.
You know who else agrees? Dalton Varsho.
Yes.
Dropped the coffee, tripped in center field. It's going to be on, it's got to be one of the first plays that I can remember. That is, so our pal Emily Agard does plays of the month and miss plays of the month on Sportsnet at the end of every month. I think it might be the first play to make both.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, I am willing to start a petition right now for the Savannah Bananas to add the Dalton Varsho to their trick play repertoire in the outfield. That looked straight out, and I get a lot of Savannah Banana videos on my TikTok feed. It was like I was watching a TikTok. It was unbelievable. But that is what he can do, Blake. He was pretty honest post-game.
That's what he can do. He can tumble. Dylan Tate's reaction was amazing as well. But I don't know if I'd phrase it as that's what he can do, because I don't ever want to see him try it again.
Listen, you know, the turf sometimes will play tricks on you. That happens, right? It's different than playing in real grass, and we know that. But it's the reflexes. It's the awareness of where the ball is, even when you have lost your sense of gravity. And you know, how did he even know what side he was facing at the time he fell so that he could put the glove to his back and catch that ball? It was really, really impressive. And that's what I mean by that's what he does. It's tremendous awareness of where he is, of where the ball's path to his glove. And that's what good outfielders possess in their repertoire.
They do. Again, though, I wouldn't recommend he show that particular set of skills off again. So I was at the game as a fan last night. So I was sitting in seats just kind of to the Blue Jays dugout side of home plate. And it was like, you mentioned keep an eye on the Leaf game. First of all, we had with the people next to us like a little setup, like used phones to position one phone. So we had the game
lovely
on there. And then the Varsho thing happens, and like the amount of, first of all, the amount of people who like briefly missed it and didn't understand mm-hmm. what happened and why everyone, but like the roar. And then when they showed the replay, it was really good. It was a bad game. Really, really fun highlight.
I was, I watched from home yesterday, which was a nice change of pace. I'll tell you that much. And listen, you know, I've been very honest about, my wife does not really care very much about baseball. She cares about it because obviously I work in it and she loves me, but she wasn't necessarily watching the game with me.
What a sick brag. I have a wife who loves me. It's something you'll never hear me say on this show.
Continue. There's hope. Blake, we're going to be doing this for many years. You never know. Yeah. Anyway, that was one of those moments where she had her headphones in, she was doing her own thing, and I'm just poking her. Watch this. You have to watch it. You have to pause what you're doing. And it was just one of those, Blake. And I expect we are going to see that highlight reel or that highlight play pretty much for the rest of the season. It was really, really entertaining.
It was good. Nothing else good in this game happened. Let's flush it and turn the page. No, look, it was an absolute barrage from the Red Sox from literally the first batter of the game. Jaren Duran leads off with a home run on a pretty good pitch. And you couldn't say that a lot mm-hmm. about Bowden Francis last night, but an 0-2-94, one of his harder fastballs of the night, up and in, 0-2, like kind of right on the edge of the strike zone, trying to freeze him there, I think, with a called strike three. And Duran takes a good pitch and takes it out. But then from there, it falls off. So Dalton Varsho highlight aside, we're going to get into the bad stuff now. 0-2 splitter to Alex Bregman mm-hmm. that just sits in the middle of the plate. We've talked about Bowden Francis' splitter not having as much depth to it this year, not quite having the same shape. While the pitch to Duran was a good hitter taking a good pitch out, the one to Alex Bregman was a huge mistake. 0-2 just left it up there for him. Christian Campbell, 2-1 count. So you got to come back in the zone a little bit, but it's a lesser fastball. It's 92 and he leaves it middle. The Rafael Devers one, full count. Tried to put it in the zone, but didn't quite get it all the way out. Again, a splitter that didn't carry through the bottom of the zone. Now, I'm not sure, was he trying to place it at the bottom of the strike zone for a called strike three? Was he trying to get it underneath and get chase and risk the walk? I'm not sure, but it sat up there a little bit too much. And then the Willier Abreu one was he tried to sneak a 2-0 backdoor curveball in there, and Abreu just kind of reached out and got it. But of those five home runs, you would say three at least were mistake pitches. Yeah. One was a good piece of hitting on a good pitch, and then one kind of somewhere in between. Not great.
Uncharacteristic too, Blake. It's
he's had some hard comments. Uncharacteristic based on last year's Bowden Francis and what I think Bowden Francis can be.
Yeah.
Yesterday, outlier, obviously, but 11 home runs allowed now.
Yeah,
it's not a great start here.
No, and it's not. I feel like with the way that he pitches, he is looking for contact. He's been pretty honest about that too.
Well, look at his near no hit bids last year. Right. It was all like weak contact. I'm going to mow down 12, 13 guys.
But
ask Taylor Ward.
But the home runs are also a problem. It's also been, you know, pretty much every one of these no hit bids that he has had at this point seem to end on a home run by the opposing team. So it's not necessarily new, but what's uncharacteristic about it is that many mistake pitches, in one very short outing, because even when he hasn't been very good or very dominant this year, Blake, Bowden Francis tends to pitch with confidence in that he is hitting his spots. And that is not at all what happened yesterday. He could not hit his spots. There was no life to his pitches. The splitter was moving so horizontally instead of breaking to the ground. It was weird. That's kind of where I'm coming from when I say it was uncharacteristic.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I saw some people suggesting, well, he's tipping his pitches. Look, again, I had a beverage or two. So, and to the left of home plate is not the best look at where pitches are coming in. But it didn't seem to me so much that he was tipping as they were bad pitches. It's, you know, if you're, think of Kevin Gausman and the way the fastball and splitter play off each other. When Gausman looks really, really good, part of why it looks weird when Minnesota picks up on something mm-hmm. is because it's so hard to tell the fastball and splitter apart until really late on the pitch's flight path. Yep. Yesterday, the Red Sox were really comfortable. The splitter was, if it was in the zone, it was too much of the zone. The fastball was down around 92 too much instead of being up around 94. And obviously 94 is not a crazy hard fastball, but given like the rise that Bowden has, and is he needs to live up there in that range. And this is a couple times now that the splitter just hasn't quite been there for him. Yeah. And because the fastball is good shape-wise, but not elite in terms of blowing it by guys, and the curveball's kind of just there sometimes, there's not another option to go to. So
you need the splitter, and the splitter is what gave him his success and really his starting spot last year.
And helps the fastball play up. So when the splitter's not there, and you can either spit on the splitter if it's down below zone, or yesterday what was the problem was catching too much zone, then yeah, it's going to look like they're picking something up. But what they're picking up is not, oh, he's tipping that it's a splitter. They're picking up that it's a bad splitter in the zone.
Yeah, there you go. It's and Francis himself said it after the game. He didn't, you know, there were allusions to tipping pitches and things of the sort. And he said, yeah, this was just one of the days where I did not execute and they did. And that is what came out of it. I'm not a fan of, you know, hypothesizing too much about tipping pitches. I think it's a little bit of a cop-out sometimes. And listen, it exists. It's a real thing. But when you're making those types of pitches, which are just mistakes in the zone, you can't really, you know, it's the same conversation that maybe we would have had about Jose Berríos on opening day when he allowed a ton of home runs. He wasn't pitching. It's just that he left a bunch of pitches in the middle of the zone.
Yeah, and look, guys do tip sometimes, and part of the coaching staff and the analytics staff and things like that, part of when they comb over the videos of the game is to try to pick up on anything that other teams might be picking up on. When it's, go back and watch the splitter to Bregman. He didn't need to get signaled from somewhere or know ahead of time that the splitter was coming. Obviously, it's stuff like that helps, but you don't need to bang a trash can. No offense, Alex Bregman. You don't need to bang a trash can to know when it's an 0-2 splitter right down the middle. I will say, with respect to tipping pitches, I know most guys wear sleeves to protect their pitching arm anyway, but Bowden Francis has a lot of tattoos, and so does Kevin Gausman. And I've suggested to them before that having tattoo sleeves will better protect you from tipping pitches because you can't see the muscles in the forearm quite as well. Like part of what you're looking for when they're tipping is, like, think of how you grip a splitter. The muscles in your forearm to make the grip on the splitter changed, and they're different than if you hold a fastball. So that's why Bowden Francis, you'll always see him grab the splitter grip when he gets the ball back, so that his forearm looks the same all the time. What I'm suggesting is, if you're a pitcher and you have trouble with tipping, just get a lot of tattoos.
Wow.
And then it's harder to pick up the muscle indentations in your
You are playing 3D chess right now, Blake Murphy. That is one use for tattoos that I had not thought of.
I don't want to be playing baseball the way this team's playing, so we'll play a little 3D chess. Okay, so the other thing that flows from this, Dylan Tate, Mason Fluharty, and Casey Lawrence all get used in that game. They have to cover 5 innings. Today is a bullpen day. Eric Lauer got scratched from his start with Buffalo. My assumption is Casey Lawrence is going to get DFA'd. Maybe he'll rejoin the organization for a 6th time, but here's a guess. He lands back with the Mariners, where he's been even more than Toronto. So my expectation would be Casey Lawrence gets designated for assignment. Eric Lauer gets added to the 40-man and called up. This would be he was scheduled to start today. This would be his turn. So you could potentially get some veteran length out of him. At least you hope for one time through the order. And then the one nice thing is, because Tate and Fluharty were pretty good yesterday, you only had to use 3 relievers to cover the 5 spots, and you had days off Saturday and Monday. So the bullpen's actually pretty fresh as far as a bullpen day goes.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's hard to look for silver linings when
it's not a silver lining. We're just trying to turn the page to what today looks like.
It's April 30th, right? Yeah. I can't believe that we are here right now, that we have a bullpen day on April 30th.
Not just a bullpen day, but a bullpen day when you just had 3 days off in the last week.
Yeah.
Like, you were off Monday, you got rained out Saturday, and I know there's a doubleheader cost to that, and you were off the Thursday before. That's, you don't want to be here already.
No, you don't. And especially, I don't know, that's just one more thing that got really, really exposed yesterday, because Francis didn't go very long. And then when you see Casey Lawrence up in the bullpen, your mind just goes to, okay, so who's pitching tomorrow? Who's pitching on Wednesday? And it's right now, it's a little bit of a snowball for the Blue Jays.
Yes, and it's a tough one. So we'll see some Eric Lauer today. Yariel Rodriguez obviously available for some length. Josh Walker's back there and pretty fresh. And then your top four leverage arms are all pretty fresh and haven't been used in a couple of days in Little, Green, Garcia, and Hoffman. You just hope that the game plays out in a way that you actually want to use those guys.
Right.
Also, one small, again, not many positives from yesterday. We'll talk some hitting in the second segment because we've got Jamai Webster coming on here in a second to talk some Red Sox. Mason Fluardi's been really good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I liked his lefty-on-lefty stuff as a prospect in the minors, but he had really, really struggled to get righties out even at the AAA level, and his ability to come in, and it's a small sample as it is with any reliever, but for him to steady the spot that was the Richard Lovelady spot at the start of the season has been a nice small thing to see. Let's take a look at the Red Sox side of last night's game and tonight's game. Let's talk to Jamai Webster, sideline reporter at NESN, two-time Emmy winner. Jamai, what's up, man? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Looking to get that third this year, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well on your way. Got to ask you, so last night's a fun one if you are a Red Sox fan. 5 home runs in the first 3 innings. How funky is that home run celebration helmet getting right now?
You mean to tell me you guys didn't enjoy that last night?
Nope.
No, that was crazy, man. I mean the 5 homers was incredible. It just shows how this offense is really starting to take off as of late. But that home run celebration, I love it, man. It's original, and obviously it derives from the Red Sox mascot Wally the Green Monster, who is a cult class hero in Boston. And they just throw that on anytime they go bridge. So it's been nice to see because they've done it 38 times in 31 games. It's been incredible.
That is incredible. And, you know, every time they put the helmet on, you know that something good is happening and brewing. And I can only imagine, Jamai, that dugout must have been buzzing yesterday with all the home runs early on. And we've spoken a little bit about just the youth, the energy on this Red Sox team right now, and they are doing damage. This offense looks very, you know, for real, and I'm wondering what the vibes are like, what the chemistry is like, and what winning does to sort of help with that.
Well, all those things are certainly ingredients for what we're seeing play out on the field on a daily basis, and really, this offense has been anchored by the addition of Alex Bregman joining the group. And you got the rookie phenom and Christian Campbell, who's also been incredible. And, I mean, he started his career getting on base almost 20 times in consecutive games. So he's been so proficient offensively, and something that the team has seen in him, he's been kind of a byproduct of what they've been trying to do. And if they could have created a player, it'd be Christian Campbell, because he's bought into their analytics, you know, their style of hitting and the things that they want to do. Anytime you talk to him about his approach, he's always talking about him just trying to hit the ball hard in the air. A lot of times it doesn't always fly that way, but it leads to some hard hit contact and barreled up balls. And it's why he's got elite bat speed and something that he's worked on leading up to this point. But I mean, it really has been Alex Bregman, who's off to a career best start to the season. I mean, I was just looking up the numbers recently, and I mean, he's slashing .331, .401 on base percentage, and a slugging percentage of .570. And that's kind of set for elite hitters. And he was talking last night about how he's just falling in love with the process, the monotony of the cage work, you know, trying to hit a ball to the same plane over and over again. And that insanity seems to be the thing that creates the great ones and separates them from already impossible task of even making it to the big leagues, which is exceptional when you consider the numbers. Only, I mean, it's what, like less than 21,000 people have been big leaguers around the world. So I think it all starts with what they're doing offensively, which is kind of what has created these great vibes. And it's why the team's on a 3-game winning streak. And, you know, Bowden Francis has been incredible against the Red Sox. You think about what he did last year. I mean, when I saw him for the first time, took these guys, you know, a no-hit bid into him late into the inning. So to be able to jump on him early, get him out of there after 3 innings was remarkable.
Yeah, it's, again, a good day for the Red Sox. One of the factors in there, obviously Bregman has been kind of the leader here, and I love that Kerry Water, Chop Wood kind of attitude toward the toward the process there. Someone else who's had a really great start to the season offensively and had a big night last night is Willy Abreu. What have you seen from his growth on both sides of the ball where, you know, a guy who I saw Red Sox fans, you know, maybe two seasons ago, not knowing maybe exactly where he fit in the long-term plan. And now he's pretty much locked in as a two-way stud for this team.
Yeah, I mean, third year of the club, MLB leading 12-3 run homer that he led them to last night. I mean, this was a guy you talked about a couple of years ago. I mean, they traded him to Houston for anchor of a catcher at the time and Christian Vasquez, who a lot of people were questioning. But you think about Houston got Vasquez on a rental for, you know, it led them to a World Series, obviously, so they got that. But the Red Sox got Willy Abreu, who won a Gold Glove last year. He is another elite defender, also really good bat-to-ball skills, and he has been just an incredible piece to what the Red Sox are building as well, because you think about how difficult it is to play right field at Fenway Park, and for him to do that in his first full season there. And also, you consider he's still one of the young guys, you know? He's been here now, but what he's doing to this point has just been great to watch, and he's a really a key piece to this Red Sox staff as well. And out the gate, it was him and Campbell and parts of Abreu really carrying the offense. And then he kind of went on a bit of a cold streak there, but he started to find his offensive game again. So it's kind of a dangerous position if you consider being the opposing team against the Red Sox right now, because they're finally starting to get production 1 through 9 up and down the lineup. I mean, Sedan Rafaela was the only guy who didn't have a hit yesterday, but that's just in due time for him because they knew coming into this season the offense would be what it is.
Yeah, just on Rafaela, since you mentioned him there, Jemai, what is it maybe that is, you know, causing this little bit of a slow start here? Have the Red Sox maybe identified certain things that he can do to turn it around?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, with him, he's also another young player. You hear about the youth on this squad and one of the guys that they've kind of anchored their ship to. You know, they just like many around Major League Baseball, kind of locking up young guys before they're proven big leaguers based off of potential. You know, it's much more of a easier investment and short money, really, if you consider it. If these guys don't turn out to be nothing, it's not much of a hit, not tying millions of dollars to them. But if they turn out to be something, then you got them on a discount. And I think these guys will be big leaguers for a long time and be contributing to the Red Sox. But as it relates to your question about Sedan trying to figure some things out, his thing is, you know, he worked a lot this offseason on pitch selection and swinging at the right ones and swinging at strikes. So he kind of has a propensity to go a little crazy in his approach and just swing at anything that he feels like he can get to. But, I mean, these are big league pitchers too. These are guys who can dot it, you know, and put it where, you know, you think it's going to be. So he's taken a lot of mental steps with the hitting staff and just lessening his ability to swing and trying to just refine his approach when it comes to just being so free swinging. So they're trying to get him to swing less because, you know, they put the numbers up against him and told him, hey, when you swing less, you actually, you know, get better pitches to hit rather than swinging at everything, because it was a time where you could just count it. You know, if you can put a bet on it, first pitch, he's swinging, regardless of where it is. So the scouting report is out on him. So they're just trying to get him to swing less. And once he does that, he can be a much more feared hitter and, you know, contribute from that 9 spot, which is a great spot for him to be in because he's turning on the lineup to, you know, Jaren Duran at that point and some of the big boys who are doing damage.
Jemai, I don't know if the Red Sox will tweak the lineup today. The Jays are going with the bullpen day. We think it's going to be led by Eric Lauer, who will be a lefty who's up from AAA. If it is a lefty and if it is something that Boston's going to tweak their order around, maybe we get to see Rob Refsnyder. And you pointed this out on the broadcast the other day. Quietly, one of the best guys in all baseball over the last couple of years getting on base against lefties. How valuable? I know Refsnyder's a veteran guy at this point and doesn't play a ton, but having that option for them to start against lefties or come in off the bench against lefties.
Yeah, Rob Refsnyder, we call him the lefty killer. because his numbers are just completely off the charts, hitting well over 300. Same thing with righties this year, actually. So, like, he is just a good baseball player. But he had this specialty role of, you know, coming in and being able to get at bats against lefties. So if that is the case, I think they probably will tweak the lineup, because Alex Cora constantly talks about having to find at bats for Ref Snyder, for another bench player who's really good, and Romy Gonzalez, you know, who was a starter on the Chicago White Sox a couple years ago. And these are the type of guys, and this is the depth that they love and appreciate now, because, you know, a couple years it was more, you know, lean with trying to find guys to fill spots, but now they got players who can be starters on other teams. And Ref Snyder is one of those guys, and as is Romy, but Ref, I don't even know how he does it, man. It really is a wondrous thing to watch, because this is a guy who sits for 4 or 5 days and then he's called upon, you know, to get one of the most prominent at-bats, maybe on a lefty bullpen guy or somebody, you know, an elite starter comes in there and he's now got to play. And he just constantly finds a way to remain ready, and he's always getting the job done more often than not, which has been great. And, you know, he's one of the leaders on this team, despite not being a starter, but just having that veteran experience and that presence and knowing what it takes to be somebody who sticks around in this league. So I think it's going to be dangerous if the Jays go to the bullpen.
We'll be on the lookout for that for sure. Whoever ends up starting this game for the Blue Jays will face Lucas Giolito, who returns tonight. Almost 2 years away rehabbing, you know, recently spoke about the mental grind of injury rehab. But this is obviously a momentous occasion, right, Jemiah? What are the expectations? What's the excitement level for the return of Lucas Giolito?
Yeah, very high. I think everybody is pumped about this no more than Lucas himself. I mean, 30 years old, and like you said, it's been a year and a half, 16, 17 months since, you know, he signed that 2-year, $30.5 million deal after the 2023 season to join the Red Sox. And really, one of the first pieces of, you know, a team that had just went to the playoffs 2 years prior, and they're looking for a starter who can anchor the rotation and who can eat up innings. And that's what he's done. He always takes the ball, and he's going to give you a quality start. And he's been durable. That was part of the reason why they signed him. I think he was fifth in the big leagues between 2018 and 2023, he made 167 starts. So that's kind of what they expected from him. But that first spring training, he had the elbow injury, which he had to get that modified Tommy John. So that left him out for the entire season with the internal bracing procedure that he got. And then spring training this year was the hamstring. So that kind of set him back, as he was healthy from the elbow, but his hamstring set him back, so he's had all these rehab and minor league assignments, and, you know, the results per se haven't been what you'd want to see. But at that level, you know, a lot of these guys are working on things. And as he mentioned, two starts prior to the most recent minor league start, where he lasted like two innings, gave up like 6-7 hits, and a lot of hard contact. But he said that he was just working on throwing strikes, because he didn't do that and the one before. So he was throwing it just down the middle, meatballs, just know that he can do it. And he didn't care what happened, but that's what he was working on, because he wanted to just refine his strike throwing. Because he mentioned, when you get to the big leagues, it's about competing with whatever you have on that particular day. So he's pumped about this, and he's really looking forward to it. And he said he's going to be a little bit nervous, not more than any other star, but it's just weird, because he's been around. He just haven't pitched a big league game for the Red Sox. So now the rotation is complete and fully healthy, and now this team can take off.
Yeah, well, hopefully that it's stopped a little bit these next 2 days, and then you guys can get back to it. Jemiah, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Keep up the great work, and go get that third Emmy.
Hey, you got it, man. Working on it every single day. Thank you.
Jemiah Webster, Nesson sideline reporter for the Red Sox. A lot of fun, and the Nesson broadcast is really, really, really good.
Yeah, unfortunately. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Red Sox play a lot of meaningful baseball. So maybe not the last 2 years or so, but historically. So you get to see a lot of Nesson, which is, you know, good for that part. Not good to watch the Red Sox hit five home runs and put up a 10 spot against the Blue Jays. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We'll talk to Mitch Bannon of The Athletic about his new role at The Athletic, as well as a little bit more from last night, including Vlad home run.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's always good when your star player hits one 420 feet. Couldn't have picked a deeper part of the ballpark to try to hit it out to. We'll talk a little bit about that, how today looks bullpen-wise. We didn't get to talk yesterday. We didn't know at that point who was going down. But Will Wagner is the odd man out with Dalton Varsho being back. So we'll talk all that stuff. We'll set you up for Lucas Giolito against Johnny Holstaff, which is game two of Jays Red Sox tonight. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you, and we're joined now by the new Blue Jays writer at The Athletic, replacing our good pal Caitlin McGrath. Mitch Bannon joins us now. Mitch, congrats on the new gig, and don't forget you're here forever.
Yeah, thanks. It feels like it's been all forever already after a week in the Bronx and one game last night, but I guess forever will be a little longer.
Oh, congrats, Mitch. It's always nice to see good things happening to good people. You've been doing good work for a very, very long time. This is awesome and obviously not ideal circumstances to start. 1-8, I believe it is, the last little bit for the Blue Jays. Just with the way that the season started, it felt like they maybe were overperforming a little bit. The narratives were good. The vibes were, you know, relatively good as well. And then now here we are. It's amazing how fast things can flip, but I am wondering what it is like for you to just get dropped into a situation like this.
Yeah, well, when I knew I was going to be covering, yeah, the team seemed pretty good. I'm like, oh, okay, this will kind of be a fun team to be around. It's easy to find fun stories and good stories on a good team. It's a little harder on a team that's 1-8 in their last 9, but you know, we make do. There's still interesting stories on this team. They're still going to try a lot of stuff, so it's a that's the job, you know?
Absolutely. What have you seen, Mitch, you know, over this this last stretch? Obviously, there's very little that hasn't been said about this this offense at this point. But, you know, starting pitching also faltering a little bit over this past turn in the rotation. What do you make of the state of the Blue Jays right now?
Yeah, it's, you know, when a team is going really well, like the Dodgers, the Mets right now, it seems like everything's clicking. The last, like, 5 days for the Blue Jays, it seems like nothing is clicking. Like, maybe the bullpen has been good, but they haven't even put the back of the bullpen guys in situations to really matter the last couple of days. So it just seems like things aren't going well for them. And it's kind of that first season, the initial, like, they got a lot of singles. They got really good pitching. As you mentioned, there was talk about whether or not that was sustainable. It's not sustainable when the starting pitching takes a bit of a step back, when you don't cash any of those singles or the singles just stop coming too. Like, as opposed to the power coming to enhance those million singles, it's kind of been a step back in every other regard the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been tough. Not being basically the worst team in baseball with runners in scoring position is bad, and then also struggling to get runners in scoring position is those things don't go well together. I want to focus. So actually, you know what? We didn't give it any time earlier, but Vlad hit a rocket last night. So that's nice to see. Yeah. He also had two very loud outs. Bo Bichette had a double. He also had a single and then stole a base and then got caught stealing on a walk. So a little bit of a mixed bag from Bo, but you were there post game. John Schneider seemed pretty encouraged by the game Vlad and Bo had at the plate, at least.
Yeah, I think if you want the positives of the Blue Jays offense last 10 days this season, you can look under the hood for these two guys. Like, I know nobody on this roster is really hit for power, those two guys included. But if you look at their expected power numbers, which I know it feels like we've been talking about expected numbers for a long time with this team, eventually they got to be real numbers. But these two guys, their expected slugging percentages are way ahead of their actual slugging percentages. You can't really say the same for Santander. There are definitely issues with the lineup beyond them. But these are two guys I expect will hit for power, and the under the hood numbers really tell us they deserve a lot more credit for their power than they've gotten so far this season. So there isn't a lot of great spins for the offense that's averaging like 3 runs a game. Those two guys are an exception.
Yeah, it does seem like maybe we are reheating our old nachos a little bit when we talk about looking under the hood for this offense. But
well, if they don't want us to reheat the old nachos, they got to give us something other than
something
stale Tostitos and moldy cheese. You know, like
Looney Dogs. Give us Looney Dogs instead.
Yeah, I got into Looney Dogs yesterday. It's Yeah, I know.
Oh.
It's normally not a thing that I do because usually I'm there as media.
That explains a lot about how you rolled in this morning, Blake.
There's no such thing as a loony dog over.
You know how they have that tracker tracking all the loony dogs eaten? Last night, they threw up, I think it was, I don't know, something thousand, 0.5. They threw a 0.5 at the end of the number. That's my journalistic duty today is to figure out how the heck you sell a half a hot dog.
So I'm going to warn you on this. So the first year of loony dogs, I regularly brought up on my show that I thought the numbers were faked. I thought they were inflated.
Yeah.
Shai Davidi does his loony dog stats and things like that. I have always done this. I believe that the numbers are faked, but me saying so is mostly tongue-in-cheek. Be careful because other news outlets tried to pick it up and like asked the Blue Jays about it. So don't dig in too much unless you want the Jays PR staff to be like, Mitch, you're killing us, man. We've got other outlets calling about this conspiracy.
We're in too deep into the conspiracy.
And Shai's complicit.
Week two at the Athletic.
Shai's complicit, so it makes it really awkward for us that.
Okay, let's get back to baseball here. That was a nice, let's put it, it was nice to deviate a little bit and talk about hot dogs. But you did mention, you know, where this lineup is, the top of the lineup, especially with Bo and Vlad. There seems to be, you know, reason for hope and good reason for hope when you look at those underlying numbers. Another guy who, you know, brought in a little bit of hope as well in his return, Dalton Varsho. John Schneider pregame yesterday saying, listen, we don't expect Varsho to come in and save our offense. That's not what he's here for. But someone who can maybe provide a little bit more pop with the bat. Make this lineup a little bit deeper, perhaps, and then obviously the outfield defense. But how did you see Varsho's return? That catch was unbelievable, obviously. Good way to start, even though he didn't necessarily get on the board here?
Yeah, I think he looked fine. He said himself after the game that he felt like he was trying to do too much at the plate, and I think that's a feeling a lot of Blue Jay hitters can probably relate to right now. That's what you got to avoid doing when you're on a slide like this. I think if Varsho comes back, becomes a regular player, just gets in the lineup, he does bring a lot of stuff this Blue Jays lineup needs. Like, he has been a just below average hitter the last 2 years for the Blue Jays, so I'm not saying he's a world beater. As Schneider said, he's not expected to come in and save the offense. But he's a guy who can pull the ball and put it in the air. And that's something the Blue Jays are not doing right now. Really, the only other guy on this team who does that consistently is Anthony Santander. And we know he's not really doing that right now either. So I think he does give them a bit of a different look. He will make it harder for opposing pitchers to kind of just mow through the same game plan against this lineup, a lineup that's just been barreling baseballs into the ground. So if nothing else, he adds a wrinkle.
So with Varsho coming back, Will Wagner was the piece who went down. We talked about it a little bit yesterday on the show, the options. Alan Roden, Addison Barger, Nathan Lucas, although if you are going to have the person in that role not play very much, maybe they prefer Nathan Lucas to be the guy sitting down rather than one of the 25-year-olds. None of those guys have hit particularly well. Wagner was at least leading the team in pitches seen per plate appearance, so working longer at bats. But obviously the number's not there, hitting 186 with an OPS barely above 500. That one surprised you at all? You like, obviously not a no obvious option there with who went down, but Wagner being the guy to go down.
Yeah, it was a weird spot because now the like half of their roster is outfielders. I think Addison Barger is basically just going to be a third baseman, not a third base option for this team going forward because it's really just him and Ernie. So I was a little surprised, but like, look, he's been struggling the last couple weeks. We know what he can do when he's really locked in. We saw it at the end of last year. We saw moments of it early this season. I really thought he was going to run away with the third base job after the first couple days of the season. That didn't happen. I think he got sent down because the team has real aspirations for him. They think he can be a legit big league player, and playing him once every 4 days, once every 5 days with the Blue Jays isn't going to help him do that. So I think it came down to both. Yeah, Lucas is a guy you're comfortable coming in sporadically off the major league bench, and Wagner is a guy you want to get every day run in AAA.
And then there's Addison Barger, right, Mitch, who will probably be just a third base option right now with how this roster is constructed. I got to say, I was a little bit surprised by Wagner being the one getting sent down, just because Blue Jays don't really have a backup first baseman right now in that roster, you know, to kind of counter their million outfielders. But you look at Addison Barger, he came in off the bench in that game one of the doubleheader, gave them two hits, including an RBI double. He seems to be showing some signs of maybe hitting the ball a little bit harder and things along those lines.
When he gets a play.
Exactly. But he is not playing regularly. And that was something that the Blue Jays sort of, you know, made a point of emphasis when he didn't break camp with the team, which was we want him to get more regular at-bats. Well, now they need the power, but we're not seeing Barger all that much. What does that do for the player? And I don't know, what does that say about just, you know, the way that this lineup is constructed, that we're not seeing Barger every day, even when he is showing these signs?
Yeah, it is bizarre. It's not something like I don't pick and choose through a roster, a lineup every single day. They're going to make their choices that they're going to make for a reason. But I do agree, he's the type of guy and has the type of swing that you think would benefit from a very extended run. Like it's a pretty long swing. It's a big power swing. That's not the type of guy you want coming in as a pinch hitter or playing once every 4 days. I completely agree. If I was setting the lineup, he'd be in against right-handed pitching. But I'm not. Like, I'm not going to play him last night against Garrett Crochet. Right. I think that's a fair one. Maybe the worst matchup for Addison Barger you could possibly imagine, but I wouldn't be shocked if against a couple righties here, they're finding playing time for him.
Yeah, Lucas Giolito tonight, Tanner Houck tomorrow. Speaking of who's pitching tonight, we get to look at one of my favorite type of guy, which is guy who left for a while. So on his Fangraphs page, his name's in Korean. Eric Lauer, you mentioned on Twitter a little earlier, he is no longer the listed starter for the Bisons today. I'd imagine it's a Casey Lawrence DFA, Eric Lauer up situation. This is obviously the cost of Bowden Francis doing a short outing yesterday. But what is your read on how this bullpen day might look today?
Yeah, it's going to be survive in advance, I think, for the Blue Jays today after yesterday. It's tough when you plan for a bullpen day and then you end up having to use a bullpen day the day before you had a bullpen day. So it's not a great situation. But I think Lauer, we saw Easton Lucas carve through this Red Sox lineup earlier this year. That's best case scenario here. You bring up a lefty they haven't seen in a while. He gets the many lefties at the top of their lineup out. Maybe gives you two times through the order. He hasn't pitched more than five innings, I don't think, with the Bisons. But he is consistently getting to exactly five innings. So they're going to have to lean on him for Lauer for the innings and then patchwork the rest of the way. It gets a lot easier if you're winning and you can use your legit bullpen arms, but I do think this is a survive in advance day for a Blue Jays team that's in a weird spot with their pitching.
Yeah, a lot of leaning on certain guys and a lot of leaning on the rotation, especially, you know, the four guys that are still around. Kevin Gausman's start had to be pushed to Saturday. We're going to see Chris Bassett on Friday because of that 53-pitch inning.
But also it lines up that Bassett pitches on his basketball jersey giveaway night, so I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I don't even care what the reason is.
Yeah.
Now, Gausman's arm's a little sore, whatever. This to me is about the basketball jersey.
Yeah, no, you know, destiny works in curious ways, but we are seeing a ton of hard work, stressful pitches again for this top four in the rotation, and you just wonder how much pressure is on these four guys right now, not just because you don't have a fifth starter, but also because the offense hasn't really shown up.
Yeah, that's basically what I wrote at The Athletic last night. It's like this team at the beginning of the season was winning games by scoring three runs and getting brilliant pitching. That's not going to happen for 162 games. Like, this is a very good Blue Jays rotation. I trust a lot of the guys that they've been tossing out to give six innings, give a quality start. But they're also going to have missteps. Like, it happened from Bowden Francis last night. That was the first time in 16 starts where he's given up over four or more runs, I believe, which is a crazy run. But crazy runs like that end. You have missteps from even really good starting pitching. We've seen it the last couple of days from Bassett and Gausman as well. When you're not scoring, those missteps just become guaranteed losses. And that's what a team can't afford. You have to find ways to win games, even when you don't have good pitching. And this team just isn't in a spot to be able to do that.
Nope. 11 games in a row without scoring more than four runs, which only the Kansas City Royals have had a worse streak so far this year. And unless it's 2015, you don't want to be compared to the Kansas City Royals. Mitch, thanks so much for doing this, man.
Mitch, before we let you go, let me just toss one last question at you. Have you been sucked in to the Keegan Mathison Marriott points insanity since you joined
Ponzi
the
Ponzi scheme? I think it's a Ponzi scheme. If I don't know.
He's taking a cut of your Marriott points?
Well, he tried to send me a referral code. It didn't go through the emails, the whole thing, so he didn't get his cut there. But yeah, I'm on the points kick now. I've become a pointsaholic, and it's only been a week. So
nice. We'll chat. That's awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of, Keegan's book arrived for me yesterday, way ahead of schedule here on April 29th. Oh. Mitch, thanks so much for doing this, man. See you at the park in a little bit.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Mitch Bannon, new Blue Jays writer at The Athletic. Let him go a minute early here because we still have a couple things from the game. By the way, you alluded to yet another historic stat. I didn't get to mention it in our actual breakdown, so I'm going to hit you with it now. So sure. The Blue Jays were out-homered 5-1 last night. They have now been out-homered 42-16 on the season. That is quick math for you guys. Minus 26 in the home run differential in just 29 games.
Right.
That would put them on pace to be out-homered by 145 home runs, destroying the all-time record, which is 115 home runs. The 1996 Minnesota Twins were out-homered, yeah. I guess sounds a little better, by 115 home runs. They finished 78-84. That is not great.
No, not great, but this is just where we're at, right? Like, the fact that we're even thinking to look up these stats in April and just, I don't know, I was tired of the there's time adage maybe like a week ago, and now there is no time. There is no more. I understand. It's a long season.
But again, like we've talked about, though, it's a long season, but
yes,
our analysis is informed by what has happened in prior seasons with the same players and the same offensive construction and stuff like that. So early asterisk.
Exactly. And you look at, you know, Orton Zwelling had a good breakdown of the Blue Jays' struggles with fastballs, hitting fastballs, and especially fastballs over 95 miles per hour. Every pitcher in Major League Baseball, every good starter in Major League Baseball is going to attack that.
The league average fastball is 94.
There you go. And if that's just where, and we saw that yesterday, there were at-bats against Alejandro Kirk and Andrés Giménez where, you know, Garrett Crochet, his last start, he kind of came back and he said, I was trying to pitch too much and I need to be more of a thrower, where there's no better lineup to sort of implement that than with the Blue Jays. Yeah, just throw 98 in the middle of the zone. Chances are they're not going to get to it. I think it was Kirk at the plate, worked a 3-0 count, and then Crochet just came back with three fastballs, the last one right in the middle to strike him out.
We talked about in the Houston series too how their defensive alignment was screaming, we don't think Kirk can catch up to this.
There you go. And so there's signs. Everyone is seeing it. We are looking up historical stats because that is kind of where we are.
That's
and
just
I'm sorry.
What I do anyway.
Too. And I'm sorry. There is no time. You have to fix it. These are glaring issues that the offense has. And you can look at underlying numbers all you want. It needs to show up in the box score if this team is still serious about making the playoffs.
Also, by the way, that Twins team that I referenced, the 1996 Twins, who are the worst out-homered team in league history, Chuck Knobloch and Paul Mahler both hit .341 that season. So they at least did the other things pretty well. Tonight, yeah, it's going to be Lucas Giolito. We have not seen him since the end of the 2023 season due to an internal brace procedure and then a hamstring strain. When we last saw him, he was not particularly good. He had a .489 ERA over 2022 and 2023. 2023 was the funny year where the Angels acquired him when they were trying to buy to convince Shohei to stay, and then they went on a losing streak, so they then turned around and sold him in the same deadline. Prior to that, though, he was very, very good. He was actually seventh in pitcher WAR from 2019 to 2021. Unbelievably good changeup, a funky fastball, and so this is like really nerdy, but a thing that I'm really curious to see when he's back out there tonight. He had one of the highest arm angles among starting pitchers when we last saw him. League-wide, everyone is lowering their arm slot. So he was like a 51 to 58 degree guy.
That is really high.
Yeah, league average right now is 37 degrees. So if you think of, you know, your arm straight versus your arm straight up, he is an extreme. But with everyone going the other way, I'm curious to see if he comes in from a lower slot tonight. We'll see it. Alejandro Kirk, by the way, 3 career home runs against Lucas Giolito. The only pitcher he has homered off of multiple times. So maybe it's a get right day for Alejandro Kirk.
You're right, though, Blake. That was really nerdy.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I do. All right, Lucas Giolito against Johnny Holstaff. Keep an eye out for the DFA and call up information prior to the game. I'll be on Blue Jays Central talking a little more Giolito and league-wide stolen base stuff. Thanks to Jemiah Webster and Mitch Bannon for joining us. To Ahmed, Jake, and Jennifer behind the glass. We will talk to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow, 11 a.m.